Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered for the first time here in 2018. Welcome to the new year, and if you're listening to this in perpetuity, well, happy new year for whenever your new year is. But I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is always, the incredibly talented and wonderfully funny Drea Kaufman.
Hello.
Oh, if only people heard the conversation we had right before we hit the record button. Oh my gosh.
I don't know that anyone would ever listen to the show again.
Some people probably would.
Might pick up some new listeners of a sort. It was very Hogwarts After Hours.
Let's just say that there's probably some fan fiction out there that's probably been written in that same category. So anyway.
Probably. Yeah. And today I really wish I'd had some magic in my house because I found the hardest thing I've ever found to clean up. And it was like half a container of laundry detergent that I spilled on the floor. It was nearly impossible to clean up. I figured it out. It took forever and was oddly clean and disgusting. But yes, I learned today that magic would have made that a lot easier. And soap, you would think, is a cleanly thing and is really difficult to clean up. So that's my little mom rant for the day.
That is kind of funny. Like, that soap is actually one of the most difficult things to clean up.
I know. It's just very... I think that is a good definition of ironic.
Yeah.
And not an Alanis Morissette version of ironic.
Yeah, that should have been in her song. You know, what's funny is we talk about how people can find us all over the place. And one of the places that we both are, as well as the Nerd Party, is on Instagram. And we had somebody comment on one of our Instagram posts. And so I thought we should mention them on the show because we appreciate people reaching out to us in all of the different platforms.
Most definitely. It was really great to hear them say it was Carl Burke 123, and they said, "Brilliant. Can't wait to listen. Any chance of a mention? This is by far the best Harry Potter podcast. You and Matt really delve deep into the books."
So thank you, Carl. 123. Great.
You.
Now I have to change my luggage combination.
It took me a second to realize what you were saying.
Yes, but I really appreciate the fact that you had those kind words for us. It means a lot. And we have so much fun getting to talk about Harry Potter. In fact, Drea, just another quick side story. So a friend of mine that I do cinema stories with has just been watching or reading through all of the books. And so over the holidays here for New Year's Eve, we actually got together with her and some other friends and we watched Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And then we watched The Philosopher's Stone, which, yeah, so that was her first time to see it after reading the book. And so that was really funny. And she just kept going, "Man, this is going so fast. Oh, wait, they cut that out." And it was really funny. I was like,
She knows the pain of the rest of us.
Yes,
now.
Exactly. So, but it was fun to get to revisit because I actually haven't watched any of the movies since we've started recording. So it was kind of neat to go back and watch one of them now. And so, yeah, that was really fun.
I don't know if it's still there, but I heard as of the first that HBO and HBO Go has all of the Harry Potter available for streaming.
Ooh, that's
all
nice.
All 8 films. So if you are looking to see them and not have to rent them or buy them, and you have HBO or HBO Go because you're like a Game of Thrones fan or something, they should all be there.
Oh, that's great. You know what was really cool is that when the iTunes upgraded to 4K, now if I don't have a 4K iTunes, I don't have a 4K Apple TV or 4K yeah. TV right now, but if I did, they would be in 4K.
Nice.
So, yeah, that's kind of a cool thing they did was upgrade all your HD movies to 4K. So it's like, now I just need a 4K TV and, player. So, hey, anybody, free gift to me would be great. So,
if you want to buy Matt something really expensive,
exactly,
those are your options.
Exactly. So, anyway, we're excited to be here. You can find us all over the places we mentioned. We are on Facebook at facebook.com/thenerdparty. We're on Twitter at @joinnerdparty. The Nerd Party is also on Instagram at the Nerd Party. You can also find us on iTunes, which is a great place to give us a star rating and review, because the reviews there really help more people find the show as they're searching for Harry Potter podcasts. And we'd love it if we were one of the first podcasts that came up when people type that in. So make sure you do that for us. It really will help us out. And like the review we got there on Instagram, we'll read your iTunes review out on the show. And last but not least, if you're over on thenerdparty.com and you would love to send us an email, go to thenerdparty.com/contact, choose a show, choose Outpost, and that'll come to Drea and I, and we'd be able to talk to you that way. So, Drea, we left off at one of the most pivotal points in the story last week, where this week, Cat, Rat, and Dog, everything picks up right from the moment where the kids think that they have seen Buckbeak get killed.
Pretty traumatizing. We start off with Harry being pretty traumatized by what just happened, or what they think they just saw happen. And or hear. I think it was more of a hear. I think they heard Buckbeak get killed.
Yes. Yes.
And just him wanting to run back to Hagrid was so heartwarming, and wanting to comfort him. It's just why, kind of like we've talked about with Hagrid before, you know, he just serves that like real special place in their heart, and it's just nice to see that again. And it's very fitting for Harry's character to like want to go rushing back in, and they're like, no, you'll get in even worse trouble, and you'll get him in even worse trouble. So you just sit put.
This is one of the chapters where I think we do kind of see Harry at his most human. Like, in his most non-wizardedness, like, his first instinct is not to think about magic, but just to kind of, like, think about rushing in, even though he might not be able to do anything. And I think that that is something that is a part of the character, and you kind of see throughout the series, which I just really enjoy. And so, I this chapter, too, the fact that the kids are trying to get away, and they've heard this happen, and they're having a very hard time dealing with that. And then, of course, Ron is having a hard time dealing with his rat, because the rat keeps, like, trying to get away from him and bites him in the finger. And everything goes to, you know, in a handbasket.
To pot. It all goes to pot from there. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a great observation, that this is kind of the most human that Harry gets. I also think this sets us up for the next kind of, I don't know, like stage of Harry's human evolution. He enters from this sort of preteen into this like teenage state kind of in this book, which will continue on into the next book, which is really great. You know, he gets to jump ahead a little bit in the chapter, not to divulge too much plot, but, you know, he does get incredibly angry and acts from this very emotional anger that he holds in this chapter. And it's just kind of the first time that he's like this angry, where he's blinded by how angry he is.
Yeah, that's something that's really interesting, because I think that Rowling never just whitewashes the fact that Harry has been through a ton in his life. And I think that this is the book where some of that really starts to bubble to the surface. It'll continue in the fourth book. And then, of course, it really comes to life in the fifth book. But I think reading it, you know, and you go back and read it, you can really start to see the evolution of that, that it, those things are slowly starting to kind of peek out of his demeanor as he's getting older, because there are these frustrations that are coming, and he's dealing with some really hard things, like, you know, what's going to happen in this chapter where he comes face to face with the guy he thinks killed his parents. And so, I mean, if you don't have a huge emotional reaction to that, you're probably not human at all. So, you know, I think that that's really fascinating to me to see. And watching the kids try and deal with all of this is really interesting, especially as, again, right now they're just dealing with their pets. And Ron is trying to keep them.
And not doing a very good job of it either.
And Scabbers is trying to get away. And this is the thing that I think is so fascinating, is how that this plays out, is that it's Crookshanks first who comes and attacks, trying to get at Scabbers. And then it's the Grim has showed up. And I think this is the thing that really makes the story come together in a way that it doesn't in the movie, because they don't do this. And so some of the story points, like Crookshanks early in the movie, just feels superfluous. And here he really has a part to play in the story, which I think is pretty fascinating, because I don't think I know when I was reading this book at the beginning, I was not expecting the story to go like this.
Right. I agree. And I think Crookshanks plays a really big part in this book, and in this chapter kind of shows you all of that beyond just being a pet. And it's just so interesting how, you know, they completely cut that out of the movie. You're right. It feels very, you know, extra and over the top and unnecessary in the movie. And then all of a sudden in the book, you're like, oh, this like totally makes sense now why we have it. And I love, and it really plays into that whole, the pets are sort of magical in this universe too, which we lose in all of the movies. But I find it really interesting that, you know, Scabbers bites and runs off. And everything in this sequence from there that sort of just goes really fast, just like in the movie. It's, you know, 10 pages, but it's like a matter of 5 minutes that it covers, you know, it's really, really fast. And that it's very different from how the book and the movie play out very differently. And that in this case, he's dragged by his hand because the Grim grabs his hand and not his leg like they did in the book. What I actually really loved about this chapter and this whole reveal right here is that I think this is the first time that Harry is kind of confirmed that he's not crazy, in that the Grim is real and other people are seeing the Grim for the first time. And I think he's starting to realize like, oh, well, this means something else then. Like, this is completely different. I have no idea what's going on now versus like, oh, it's this omen that's going to kill me. Like, I think this is the first time where someone else sees it. Yep. And is like, what is that? So, and I really like, and I was paying attention to that this time. And I think I was like, ah, yeah, there it is. There's that satisfaction of I'm not crazy.
Well, and that's the thing that I like too, is because like you said, there's the moment where the Grim, the dog, goes for Ron's hand and drags him by his hand and then starts dragging him by his leg because his hand was what was holding Scabbers.
Yeah, you know? Which makes sense.
And so she really pays attention to detail. But yes, that whole idea of like he's not crazy, like Harry's not crazy, it's so interesting how he can put the puzzle pieces together, because as Ron gets dragged under the Whomping Willow tree, and Harry and Hermione are backing away from the tree and realize they need to get into it, Crookshanks does this thing, again, becomes very important, walks over to this little knob and presses it, and it stops. And it's so much better than the way they do it in the movie, because all the things make sense then. All those things come together. And that's the moment where Harry kind of puts together, Hermione's like, what in the world is going on? And he's like, oh, I've seen the dog and the cat together before, and I think they're so working
inspiring
together. Yeah. And so there's a moment of realization for him where it comes together that there's something else going on here. And Harry's not a bad little detective. Like, his mind is pretty quick, and I really liked the way that this works. So
he's really good at deductive reasoning, where he can take things that aren't explained out and sort of put them together and be like, oh, so this is what it could mean. And sometimes his deductions are not right. We've all played Clue and totally biffed it. But he is very, very good at that, and very good at reading between those lines. And it's interesting because you don't really know in terms of his sort of upbringing where he learned that. But he's very good at it. And I always kind of chalked it up to, it was probably like a parent thing. Like, it was a hereditary. His parents were probably really good at it, so he got it just by being Harry. But yeah.
Yeah. You know, I wonder if it came from, and this is just speculation, but I wonder if it came from Harry being somebody who was pretty much seen and not heard for most of his life.
Or not even seen.
Right. And so he has put that to use. He's just become somebody who's really observant you know, and he has to piece things together. I think, to me, I guess that kind of makes sense in a way. Like, that's where he, that would have come into play. Somebody like that who kind of has to be internal because nobody wants to talk to them, so they just watch a lot of things happen around them that nobody really even notices they're there. That would kind of make sense to me.
I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, they make it into the tunnel underneath the Whomping Willow, and they're not really sure where it's going, but Harry realizes, I think that this leads somewhere near Hogsmeade because it's on the map, but then it disappears from the map, and it turns out they're in the Shrieking Shack. And this is the other place, too, where the book is much better, I think, than the movie, because they're really going to take their time. Rowling is really going to take her time to explain everything and to, like, you have waited for this moment, so she's not going to let you down in the explanation. And of course, Ron is laying on the bed when they show up, and he's like, it's a trap! It's a trap!
It's a trap!
Yes. And of course, the dog turns into the human known as Sirius Black.
I feel like the only thing that was a little disappointing for me in this chapter, and I think that it differs from the movie, and it might just be a visual thing, is that we've had this bad baddie, right, describe this entire book and as this really horrible, awful person. And I don't feel like the reveal of him being the Animagus quite lived up to this, like, bad baddie. You know, he didn't seem quite crazy enough and quite dangerous enough. And I don't know what she could have done differently. And that's why I'm wondering if it's just maybe a visual thing. Seeing him in the movie had a greater impact. But that immediate reveal moment felt more epic in the movie than it did in the book. And it could just be, too, because, you know, I knew it was coming. But, you know, that to me was just the piece that was just slightly off, and I haven't quite put a finger on why yet. But for me, especially knowing it, it was like not as I wanted to be more afraid, and I really wasn't that afraid.
You know, I think the thing that I responded to in the book that I really liked is the he doesn't come off quite as insane as he does in the movie. But he comes off as very cold and calculating at the beginning when they reveal. He talks about, you know, Harry's father and how, you know, you're brave just like him and I'm grateful. That'll make everything easier. And it seems even creepier before you really get to the end of the chapter, because this just seems like, oh, he's nuts. Like, he's gonna, you know.
He's toying with it.
Yeah, he is so dead inside. He's toying with children before he kills them. Like, so that's the feeling that I kind of got, which is really interesting. And then he's like, Ron, lay down. You're going to hurt your leg more. Like,
I know.
Completely switches. Like, so there's this, it's almost like this bipolarness, and that's what kind of makes everything so scary.
See, and I didn't take that as scary, and it probably is that I know what the next reveal, the next big twist is going to be. And it's hard to read it without that now. It's hard to read it from that. It was really hard for me to read this chapter from the perspective of not knowing what happens next. And I haven't had too much of a hard time so far in the books. I've been able to kind of be like, I'm going to just forget. This is the first part where it's like really hard for me to separate it out. So a lot of what he said, I had come across in a different way than in this creepy kind of psycho way. I couldn't put the creepy back in it. I couldn't put the creepy in it. And I don't want to say much more so I don't spoil the next chapter for anybody. But
well, and it is interesting, too, because this is the point, again, where the book does the book thing, where Harry is not having any of this, you know, and he attacks Sirius Black and just starts pummeling him with everything his 13-year-old body has. And then Hermione gets into the fight, and Ron is just yelling. And before you know it, Black has Harry by the throat. Hermione kicks him out of nowhere, which is awesome. And Harry's able to get his wand. And then Crookshanks jumps into the fray and puts himself on Black's chest, is basically trying to protect him.
And then Harry's like torn. Do I kill the cat and Black? And it's just, it's so, because that is, I think, one of those most human moments where Harry's like, wait, do I kill the cat? Like, do I kill, I have no problem killing this human, but the cat. I mean, let's hold on now, guys. Do we kill a cat? And like, it's just that human side to him that comes in and like has this weight of what he's really going to do. And he's like, wait, but if the cat's there, I should just kill the cat. I mean, I don't know. Should I kill the cat? It was just, I just saw like the struggle he was having in the moment of like, what does he do? And it wasn't about taking a human life. It was about whether he sacrifices Crookshanks or not.
Well, and before, just right before that happens too, you know, Harry's like, you know, you killed my parents. And Black says, well, I don't deny it. But you haven't heard the whole story. You need to hear the whole story to understand. And Harry is just like, you don't understand. I can hear, you know, I've heard my mom trying to save me from Voldemort and him killing her. Did you know that? Did you know that? And it just, it's such a charged place of emotion. And before they know it, they hear somebody coming into the Shrieking Shack, and Hermione's like, we're up here, Sirius Black, and Lupin comes in and disarms everybody of their wands.
And I like how that plays out better in the book, that he kind of gets rid of everyone's weapons and kind of brings everyone onto this like even healed ground, right? And that in the book, you know, in the book he's accused. I like the interchange between Hermione and Lupin in the book a lot better than I do in the movie. You know, she's like, he's been helping Sirius Black enter the castle. He wants you dead too, Harry, and he's a werewolf. And I love Lupin's response of, you're not your usual self. You only got one of the three correct. He knew exactly how to hit her. And she was like,
it reminds me, what? Of Luke Skywalker in The Last Jedi, where he's like, it's amazing. Every one of those words you just said was wrong. Like, yeah. It's kind of the same thing.
Pretty much. You know, he goes, no, I was not helping him, which we don't get in the movie. In the movie, he doesn't deny it. You know, no, I don't want Harry dead, because nobody in this room wants Harry dead. And three, like, I am a werewolf. And I love how Hermione's like, I should have said something.
Well, and he's like, but everybody already knows.
Yeah, but here is where, when we talk about Ron playing the kind of a character and presenting that almost racist or person who has like this pre-deceived idea of what certain things in his culture mean, right? Is that, you know, a werewolf. Can you believe Dumbledore would hire a werewolf and everything like that? He brings, again, in that perspective of this wizarding world having this bias against werewolves, even though he's been perfectly fine and safe this entire, you know, year, and he's taught them more than any other professor had ever taught them, and, you know, all of that didn't matter to Ron anymore. He just knew he was a werewolf and that he shouldn't be allowed to teach.
Yeah, that's one of those things where she does a great job of kind of inserting what the Wizarding World prejudices are with Ron's character, so we're allowed to see those. And, you know, I think even Harry probably thinks to himself, oh, that's weird. And from everything Hermione has obviously studied, werewolves no good, you know, so there is this running bias. And I think that that's pretty fascinating. The thing that also really struck me, too, is that there is so much more to Lupin and Black's reunion, because they kind of do this thing where they like half finishing each other's sentences, you know, but then, and, you know, and unless, and then he, unless you switched without telling me, and all of these things, like there's all this stuff going on between them. They haven't explained it to anybody. And then they hug, and that's what throws the kids out of whack, because Hermione's like, I don't believe it, you know, like, so she's really doing a good job of setting up what's about to come out, which is this humongous revelation about what happened the night that, you know, Harry's parents were murdered.
Well, and I love that sort of like filling in the blanks conversation kind of gives you the idea that, you know, Lupin didn't really buy it either. You know, and I won't get into it quite yet, but it's almost like when you have that gut instinct about something, but you can never prove it. And then all of a sudden you get that key thing you need to prove your point. And you're like, oh, yeah. And like everything you say is like a half thought because you know the other half of it. It was like a conversation of that. And it lets you know there really is more going on here than you think, that we know and that we're going to be really excited to hear what like this sort of suspicion of this alternative version of reality was going to be. It's and it adds confusion at the same time when you don't know what that resolution is. You're like, I'm so confused. What is going on? And I think that adds to Harry's like angry emotional chaos is this additional, I don't know the whole story. Like he kind of doesn't want to know the whole story, but he's also really frustrated by the fact that no one will just tell him the whole story. Stop telling me I need to know it and just tell me what it is.
Right. And I love that this is the way that Lupin handles it. He hands everybody back their wand and he says, we will tell you what happened. So let us explain. And then he starts talking about the map and they're like, wait, the map? You know what that is? Because he's like, yeah, I was watching the map tonight. And like, yeah, the Marauder's map. It was, I helped write it. I'm Mooney. And so you just immediately start to get these explanations for things. And so the fact that he was watching the map because he knew that the kids were probably going to sneak out that night and go down to Hagrid's. And then you find out.
So much more sense.
Yes. And then you find out that he knew about the cloak because he had seen James use it a number of times. Like all of this comes together so much better.
I'm confused and I'm trying to remember back to, I think, book one when Harry gets the cloak. Do we know at that time that that was his father's cloak? Or is this kind of the first time we're told who it belonged to?
No. The note says that it was left in his possession by his father the night before he died, or the before his parents died.
Okay, so
that
we
it was
didn't
his
really
father's.
Know.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, so this is kind of the first time we knew that the cloak had been used before, like that it was in play and that his dad had it. And like, this is another insight, a very small, like one sentence insight we get into like Harry's parents too and what that was like, what
right.
their time at Hogwarts was like, right? Like another tiny little insert.
Yeah, the fact that his dad used the cloak just like Harry does.
Right.
To do things he wasn't supposed to do,
just like does.
You know, and so yeah, it is great because we always knew that it was his father's, but we didn't necessarily have that sense because we haven't spent enough time. And this is where we really start this book. We kind of get more insight into who Harry's parents were. And I think that's one of the things that makes this a deeper book in some ways, is that we finally start to get kind of the history of the Harry Potter world, the context for what happened. And, you know, in the end, context is king. If you don't know the history, it can kind of hurt. And she gives you just enough at the right times to really make this story kind of sing. And so the fact that he was watching the map, he knows they went down to Hagrid's, and then he, as they come back from Hagrid's, he realizes and he sees on the map that they're with somebody else that they weren't before. And they're like, what are you talking about? And he's like, well, it's got to do with your rat. And Ron's like, what does Scabbers have to do with anything? And Lupin's like, can I see him, please? And this is where everything just like totally just gets thrown out the window. Like everything you thought you knew, especially if you're reading for this for the first time, you're just like, holy crap.
I feel like it's only going to keep going this fast into the next chapter. And this is that chapter that makes me want to like keep reading on because we're almost like we almost know enough, but we don't quite know enough yet. And you want to know the rest, but you don't. You're not there yet. It's in the next chapter. But the huge review being, you know, that it's Peter Pettigrew and not Scabbers. And then it makes you go back and kind of think about, well, then what is Crookshanks isn't chasing a rat because it's a rat. And, you know, there's all this crazy stuff going on. It just like, it's like a ton of bricks. Someone walked in and dropped the mic and walked out.
Well, and it's that place that like when you stop here, you're like, so Peter Pettigrew is an animagus who was Ron's rat. And you go back all the way to the beginning of the book where she talks about them going to the animal store at Diagon Alley, and the fact that he's lived a lot longer than a normal garden rat, and he hasn't really shown to have any magical ability this whole time that he's been with this family. And so, you know, I think it's really interesting. But, you know, I think the most interesting thing to me is, and this is something I just literally thought of right now, Peter Pettigrew spends all of his time with what Voldemort's side would consider the traitorous of most traitorous wizards. Isn't that fascinating?
He spends, it's so weird. He spends like years and years with them. And I have to imagine it either would have made him horrifically angry and like just that person who everything they said made him angry to the point where he like wants to yell at them to shut up after so many years. Or you would think it would make him like horrifically sympathetic. And he doesn't seem to, well, we're coming to see if any of that happens to him. But yeah, it's for someone who we're going to learn so much about. It is interesting how much time he spends with this family that should drive him up the wall.
Well, and it may...
He should have just woken up and killed them all, honestly, if he's true to his character.
Well, the thing
not
is...
Not that I want the Weasleys dead or anything.
The thing that I don't get then is and I guess part of it that's never really answered anywhere in the series is to why he isn't with, like, a family. And is this the reason? Is he not with a family that's all, like, pure blood crazy? Because they wouldn't want a rat as a pet because they're too good for that. Like, that's like the lowest of the low, you know? Like, I just wonder if there's something about those type of people that it wouldn't allow them to care for this pet the way that the Weasleys care for him. He's not, no magical abilities so far, no, never shown any, yet they still keep him around and treat him like a good pet.
Have a thought on that, but I can't say it now or I'll spoil it for people.
Ah.
So we can come back, remind me to come back to that probably at the end of the next book, mid next book, sometime next book I can get into it.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's a great question. We'll have to put a pin in because it's just something I just started thinking about right now. There's a why he
Why
would
them?
Hang out with them for that long and not have been with a group of wizards who quote unquote held to what he held to or said he held to as a character. But big questions, I think, for the character and things we can't completely get into yet because we would totally spoil the entire story for this book as well as a couple books.
Part of next yeah. book.
So, but something we will have to consider and think about as we get through those. But I'm really excited because obviously the book is, we're here. Like everything is about to be revealed and the story just continues to get better and better from here. And I was reading this today, I was just being reminded of why this is my favorite book in the series so far, and it's because it really is the one that the depth really starts to come into everything for the characters, and I think even for her writing is you can tell there's an increase in quality, I think. And this is really interesting because this is the one that's really the most of the detective story for them. So I really love that. So, Drea, if anybody wants to catch up with you or maybe ask that question to you on Twitter where you could,
not spoil it.
Yeah,
for everybody.
be all spoilery. Where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, Kaufman.
And you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. I'm on Instagram under the same name. I'm here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations, a award-winning podcast. You can find all about Star Wars. We're pretty excited. We won a Parsec Award. So, but we're not going to let it go to our heads. Our goal is just to make sure that you have the best Star Wars podcast out there every single week. So I hope you will enjoy that. You can also find me on the Trek FM network talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine with Chris Jones. We just celebrated 25 years of Deep Space Nine as we're recording this today, Drea. How awesome is that?
Wow, that's I know. Crazy.
Makes me feel so old. And then to do the 602 Club over there, which is our general geek show. We're talking about all the fandoms that we love. We have a blast over there. Drea's been on talking about some of the Harry Potter films or like Doctor Who. We talked about together Stranger Things, but it's just a blast because it's not tied down by any one subject. We try to cram in as much as possible. And last but not least, you can find me kind of talking about the morals, meanings, and messages of movies with my friend Courtney over on Cinema Stories. But thank you for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.